Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
Good evening, you're listening to the Movie Review Show on Vectis Radio. You can find us online at vectisradio.com. Podcasts should be available later this evening. I'm Zeb, and tonight we'll be discussing the biggest and Ant-Size latest releases, including Mamma Mia 2, Skyscraper, Incredibles 2, and Ant-Man and the Wasp. Tonight I'm joined by Tozen.
Hello.
Sharon.
Hello.
And Sean.
Hiya.
How is everyone?
Warm.
Yeah, I second that. But it's still lovely. You can give me this all day. I'll take this forever, really. I love the hot weather.
I think I should be one of those Victorian ladies that carries a parasol, because I would be quite happy in the shade all the time.
Okay, cool. If you answer the question, how's everyone? I'm going to say proud, because that was like Zeb's first intro of starting the show off. Honestly, I'm telling you, like, I couldn't be prouder if I was a dad. The way I put it is that if I was lighter skinned, I would be blushing right now.
So what have we seen this week?
Well, I have done, well, you can guess from the spiel at the beginning that I have seen Mamma Mia.
No
Here
way.
We go again. Yes way. And I have also, I hate to sort of sound, you know, really superficial, but I went to see Skyscraper, not because I like action adventures, not because I like burning buildings or heroics. I went to ogle the main leading man.
Oh, yeah, and that sure. was?
Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. So I did go just for a few. You could have turned the sound off, and I just went, Dwayne. So I did go watch the girl films. I watched the girl films.
Now let's see. I would like to speak in defense of The Rock. You can't turn the sound off. The man's got a great voice.
He has.
The voice is part of the package.
It is, and he has that smolder. I basically just want to, you know...
I think he's...
Wrestle
him
to the ground, lick as much as I can get before I get pulled off by security, basically.
I actually like The Rock. I think, I mean, apart from that mummy when he was in, but...
Scorpion King.
Yeah, Scorpion King.
But, yeah.
But, I mean,
we don't talk about that.
No, we don't. I really, really loved him in Rampage, I thought.
Yes, he was... Yeah, I saw that.
And although I wasn't so keen on the Skyscraper movie, it was... He was still a good action hero.
But like, he did great. Talking about his smolder, he did brilliantly in Jumanji as Dr. Smolder.
Yeah,
Bravestone.
He did. Yeah, there's another one. So yeah,
he just plays up to his best points in those sort of things, I think.
So what's Skyscraper about?
Skyscraper is about the main character is Dwayne Johnson. He is a former SWAT. You get the feeling at the beginning he's a former special agent guy, and you first meet him, he's like a SWAT agent. He's going into this hostage situation where a guy is holding his family hostage, and they go in and they want to sort it out peacefully, they will. If not, they'll use extreme force to actually save lives. They've got children involved, and he's already shot some like local law enforcement officers, this is the bad guy. And then his SWAT team goes in, and the guy has a dead man's switch and a bomb on his chest.
It's Die Hard.
But before they can actually take out the bad guy, because he's holding a child at the time, he detonates the bomb, and then all chaos ensues. And this is where there's a little bit of a twist in it. Dwayne Johnson gets hurt and he loses a leg. From that point on in the film, he's an amputee and he has got a prosthetic leg, which comes in very handy later in the film.
Oh,
and
then, so this is when it becomes Die Hard.
That's when it becomes Die Hard. Yeah. And then you jump... 10 years later, he's now married to his doctor, who is an army doctor. She's the beautiful Neve Campbell. And they have two children, two twins. And he's become a security consultant. And they're working in, I'm just going to make sure I get the right city, Shanghai, I believe.
It's based in Shanghai.
Yes. And he's a security consultant for the tallest building in the world. This mammoth, huge... Because it's called the Pearl, it's got this huge big orb thing at the top of it. And then this, as you get with all these sort of super rich mega billionaires, he's made some enemies when he was getting his building built, and the bad guys then turn up and they want to destroy the building. And one of the wins they do, they want to sort of they steal some information to help them access the security system, and so it all goes horribly wrong. And basically the building gets set on fire, and Dwayne's family are still inside. So he's outside in his challenges to get inside and then to get them out and then to sort of do a lot of wrestling with the bad guys on the way. So it's basically Die Hard meets The Towering Inferno meets there's so many things I've gone, hang on a minute, I think this is just like
so it's not really particularly anything new.
Oh no, it's quite derivative. But it's done in such an entertaining way. I mean, he gets into a building by, you know, climbing up this sort of skyscraper and then swinging this sort of gurney thing and smashing windows and jumping in. And at one point, he uses his prosthetic leg to, like, as a sort of lasso thing.
Okay, now, this film, I wanted to see this film, right? Because, as you said, I'm pretty sure that the pitch meeting for this film was someone who went into a room and said the words, "Think Die Hard meets the Towering Inferno." Yeah. Everything about this film, all the advertising tells you Die Hard meets the Towering Inferno. And I was sitting there going, as long as it knows that's what it is, this could be a lot of mindless fun.
Yes. Yeah. And there's one scene in there, they're in the Pearl, which is like a virtual reality sort of dome thing that it can sort of make, it can mirror the outside, so you're in it and it suddenly becomes transparent and you are suspended in space. So it can do all sorts of things and it can reflect images all over the place. So you then suddenly get an Enter the Dragon moment where, like with Bruce Lee, with all the Hall of Mirrors and everything, where you don't know which way the bad guy is, and so you're shooting all, and it's. So they're a homage. Let's say it's a homage.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I would
to
say
other films.
Normally with a film like this, you can imagine I would totally pan it. But I have to say, for all the ridiculousness of it, it was a fun movie. It was a fun movie. It wasn't particularly serious, like, but it was. So I did enjoy this movie, even though perhaps I had a few issues with it.
You don't think too hard.
No,
about
that's
some
what
of
I mean. So it wasn't.
You're thinking, really, with that. Did you do that in that situation? But it's fun. I mean, to just go, "Oh, Dwayne, you're so tall and strong." And everyone else went, "Hey, you know, punch that bad guy and shoot that thing."
The thing is, as I said, with this film, this is a film that when I watch it, I do not plan to totally leave my brain at the door. But I do plan to just say, look, I'm not here for great acting. I'm not here for, like, you know, deep storytelling. I'm not here for a story arc that, like, takes the main character. No, I'm here for mindless fun that you go, that is great, because that would never happen in real life.
Yes.
That is why I'm here. And as long as the film delivers on that, I am fine. I do not expect it to be a 5-star. I don't expect it to be a... I think this film should just about scrape a 3. Without watching the film, I'm saying as long as this film just about scrapes a 3 and doesn't do anything that it's mega stupid, like trying to be all po-faced and not realising that it's a stupid film.
Yeah.
I think that's it, which is maybe we'll come to a film a bit later, but no, it wasn't meant to be serious at all. You could just tell, whereas if they'd tried to put a serious bent on it, that he was some sort of hero, then I think perhaps I wouldn't have enjoyed it quite so much.
I mean, he has skills, but it's... We knew that.
We knew that.
Okay, so how many stars would you give that one?
I would give a solid sort of 3, 3.5 for pure entertainment.
Yeah, I'd give it 3, I think, just for, you know, I mean, it was just a fun time. So, yeah, 3. What I mean is I didn't get angry with it. I didn't get upset with it. I didn't get so...
We know what you like, Sean.
Yeah. I always had a 4D. So I only watched the 2D, but I thought I had like a 4D experience, because when I was watching it at the cinema, it was one of those really hot days. The cinema was getting hotter and hotter and they turned the air conditioning off a bit early. And so by the end of the film, I was like sweating like Dwayne was, you know, like I had been in a burning building. I mean, I was... experience the full 4G emotion of the whole experience. So I'll probably give you that extra, that's what counted for that extra 0.5 point, I think. I was sweating along with them by the end. Yeah. I really was.
Oh, all right, cool.
It was fun.
Cool. So today, I think what was it, Seb? How many films did we have? Six films?
I think it was.
Yeah, we have 6 films, so we're going to have to blast through these because we have, what happens on the show is that we always have breaks and we have to do like 2 shows before each break, or 2 films before each break. So I think it's about time we crack onto the next one.
Yes.
So what are we doing next?
I think it's Mamma Mia up next.
Mamma Mia.
Oh, back to Sharon.
Here we go
back
again.
Back to Sharon again. She's in the hot seat today.
Talking about,
forget the words.
talking about films that we do not expect to be anything more than a good, clean, 3-star fun. Mamma Mia!
Mamma Mia! Yay! Yeah, Mamma Mia, just to launch straight into it, is both a prequel and a sequel to the phenomena that was Mamma Mia, which is, believe it or not, 10 years ago that film came out. And so I don't know if it's quite 10 years forward, because some things you think, yes, it is, and others you think, I'm not sure. But anyway, it's 10 years after the first film, and the prequel element is where you get to see Donna, who was played in the original film by Meryl Streep. You get to see how she got into this sort of love triangle. Well, it's a quadrangle, really, because there's like four of them involved. So you see her when she's leaving uni and she decides that she doesn't want to go back to America. She's studying at Oxford, where she meets her two best friends, and they sort of have this girl group called Donna and the Dynamos. And she's decided that she's going to go and have like spend her summer after she's graduated just enjoying Europe. Mm. And so she goes to Paris, where she meets a young Englishman called Harry, and they sing Waterloo, as you do. And then they sort of have a little bit of a fling there. Then she decides that Paris is not where her heart is. She feels called to go to Greece, and especially to a place called Kalokari, which was known at the time, where before the New World were discovered, as the end of the world, because that's the last point of Europe before the vast Atlantic takes over. So she heads down to Greece, and then she meets this rather dashing young Swede called Bill. And they have a bit of a flirtation, but then it doesn't get any further than that, because he has to go and take part in this yachting race. But, you know, they have this sort of, have a lovely day on there in his yacht, and then he drops her off on Kalokari. And then when she's on Kalokari, she meets this sort of handsome young American called Sam, and then that's love. She sort of feels instantly connected to this chap, and they have this sort of blazing, passionate affair.
So that's Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan as a young Pierce Brosnan.
Okay, cool.
And then after she's been involved in this passionate affair with him, she realises that he's engaged. It all, you know, falls apart. You know, you know you cheated on me, and I think you know when, as the song goes. And and then she and then she falls back into the arms of Bill the Swede. And then jump forward to the original film, you have, you know, who's my dad? Well, we don't know any more than she does, because she's had these relationships with the three guys. But what could have been really seedy, you're thinking, is actually quite charming about it, because each one of them is personable, they're charming, they're funny. So it makes it almost understand, not because you're thinking, really, that's not such a, you know, sweet story, but it makes you engage. So they tell Donna's story in flashback throughout the whole film. And then the sequel bit is like it's 10 years on, no spoilers, but they've reopened the hotel where that was falling apart in the first film. It's now going to have its grand opening, but things go a little bit awry. So they invite all their friends and family to the big party, and that's the older versions of, you know, Bill, Harry and Sam, played by Pierce Brosnan, Stellan Skarsgård, Colin Firth, come back to the island, and then more fun and games and singing ensues.
Something tells me you've seen this more than once. You're so off pat with all the names of that.
And
I
then
definitely struggle with
you
that.
You get scenes with Cher pops up as Meryl Streep's mum, and she sings a song to her lost love, who happens to be called Fernando.
I wonder what song they used then.
I know a song about that.
Okay, so at the moment, right, you can see that I'm even bothering, because usually when we're on the show, we get carried away and we just start talking about a film without giving you background to who all these people are or anything like that, or what the characters are. I'm like, look, it's Mamma Mia. If you have... It's essentially, I think the people who are going to watch this film are already predetermined.
They know.
If you haven't watched the first one already, you're probably not going to want to watch the second one. If you have watched the first one, you've probably already watched the second one. So
spoiling anything.
So we're not spoiling anything. We don't have to give you any background. You know the background. We do not plan to insult you by trying to tell you who Bill, Harry, and
Sam.
Oh.
It's been packed, isn't it? It was packed that first week it was open. It was like.
I have actually seen it twice, and both times the cinema was full.
Do you find it clings to the original film, or does it have enough substance sort of for it to be its own?
Well, I think it's definitely just got that affection for the original film, and you can see that it carries on. I mean, there's a really nice touch, I thought, because, again, I noticed it in the first one, but then it really cemented it in my head the second time I watched it. When the characters appear, the first time you see, like, old Harry, the song they sang in the first play, you can hear the instrumental of it playing in the background. And each character, so it was like, you know, his song was like Last Summer, you know, we walked along the Seine and whatever. So that's playing in the background, but you don't hear the words.
Do we get... do we get an instrumental version of SOS on Pierce Brosnan shows up?
Because and then you get a little bit of a, he does a little bit of a, like the sort of talky singy bit with his SOS.
Well, they weren't going to get him to sing again, were they?
No, he does a little bit, but not a lot. And then with Julie Walters and with Bill, they have Take a Chance on Me. It's just like the playing in the background when they first appear. So that's a really nice touch, I think, towards the first film. But yeah, I think it's the first film. It's sort of just imagining, you know, how they met and seeing these little snatches of it. You actually get to see their lost, their summer of love, as it were.
How much of the cast is new in this one?
Well, there's Cher as the grandmother is new. Andy Garcia as Fernando is new. And pretty much it's the everyone else who was from the first film. All the main characters from the first film. Some of them, but they're like the best friends and the head and the party people aren't there. But you have got the three boys and you've got the two best friends, Julie Walters and Christina Baranski.
Okay, how many stars would you give it?
I would give it just for sheer entertainment 4. I don't think it's up there with Mamma Mia. I think that is... It's a winner's class of its own, really. But there are certainly some joyous moments in this. There's a moment that's utterly heartbreaking, and there's just bits that you just laugh out loud to. So I would give it 4 for sheer entertainment.
All right, cool. Now, this is the thing. I remember when Meryl Streep was being interviewed for the first film, and they were asking her why she decided to go do Mamma Mia, because Meryl Streep doing a singing, dancing musical, that's not Oscar material. Why is Meryl Streep doing this? And she described the first Mamma Mia, because it was released, it went on stage in Broadway, and it was on stage at the same time as 9/11 happened. And when they sort of like reopened everything, she said it was like a tonic. It was just like something where people could just go and feel happy.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, that's stupid. We don't care. It makes us feel happy. And I feel like that's what this film is about. This film is not out to win any awards. It's there to make you feel happy. And like if you're one of those sort of closet ABBA fans, because everybody's either an ABBA fan or closet ABBA fan.
Yes.
I think the world is split into two types. And if you're one of the closet ABBA fans, it's one of the few places where you can go and, like, you know, just let it out and, like, forget about your cynicism, forget about all that kind of stuff.
Just go.
I have a friend who's planning to go again, and this time her and her friends are planning to dress up as Donna and the Dino.
Wow.
That would be fun. And people at the end of the film, they do applaud. We had people clapping at the end of the film, which, you know, you think, is this a film? People don't do that normally, but they were just, people were just really getting into it. I would imagine the sing-along version, when that comes out, would be a blast, to be honest with you.
Okay, all right.
So, I would give it 4.
You give it a 4. Give it a 4, because I think, look, there's no use complaining about Mamma Mia or anything or anything. Just look, resistance is futile. Just give into it. Just accept that's what people are going to love, and accept this is going to make a lot of money, and accept that it's going to make a lot of people happy, which, quite frankly, I think we need quite a bit of in this world. So anyway, as we said, we're zooming along in this song. We have Gucci's first ad break, and we will see you guys back after this break.
Vex's Radio. For the people, by the people. Island Harbour presents The Breeze Restaurant and Bar. We offer a variety of delicious foods which can be enjoyed inside the recently refurbished restaurant or outside, overlooking the picturesque marina. Start your day well with something from our breakfast menu. Enjoy afternoon tea with a slice of freshly made cake, or drop by for an evening meal with the family. We offer a range of tasty British classics with a choice of daily specials. Our produce is locally sourced to ensure quality and taste. The Breeze Restaurant and Bar, one of the Solent's best kept secrets. Call us today on 533-388.
As a business, you have a legal responsibility to dispose of your waste in line with current government legislation. Island Environmental Hygiene Limited are an island company specialising in the collection of sanitary, clinical and hazardous waste, working closely with the Environment Agency to ensure your waste is disposed of legally. Our services are tailored to meet your needs. To find out more, visit islandhygiene.com or call 721-943.
Squire's Barbershop are the longest serving barbers in Pyle Street. Open from 8:30 till 6:30 Monday to Thursday and until 7 p.m. on Fridays. Saturdays is an early start from 8 till 5. We now have a weekday family special, so you can save yourself pounds. Go and see Jay the Lardy Barber. He's back and ready to cut and style your hair. For a quality-focused barbershop serving the local community, it has to be Squire's Barbershop, 68 Pyle Street, Newport. Get in, get trimmed, and go.
This is Vectis Radio, the Isle of Wight's local community station. Vectis Radio was set up on the 23rd of January 2010. We are a community radio station which promotes local businesses, events, charities, and more. The station pays for itself by offering affordable but competitive advertising rates to local companies. For more information, call our sales team on 01983 527 733.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. marketing@vectisradio.fm.
Welcome back to the Movie Review Show. I'm Zeb. We've got a lot of films to get through, so why don't we begin with Mission Impossible?
Mission Impossible. Okay, I think both me and Tozin have seen this.
Yes, we have.
Okay, if you want to give the story, and then I'll give you my thoughts.
It's a Mission Impossible movie. It's Tom Cruise. What do you need a story for? Like, you know he's going to climb stuff. You know he's going to try and kill himself in many, many ways. You know, so, okay, obviously, this is the Mission Impossible Fallout. Is the sixth movie in the Mission Impossible franchise, which I think has morphed a bit from one to film six. It's kind of done a Fast and the Furious in changing what the franchise is actually about. But this is Ethan Hunt back. So Ethan Hunt is like the Tom Cruise super spy who works for Impossible Missions Foundation or whatever they're called. And it kicks off with them doing a mission, as it always does. And they're trying to retrieve some plutonium from some people. This goes wrong, and then they spend the rest of the film dealing with the fallout, see where they got the title from, of that whole thing throughout the rest of the film. And this is the first film in the series that brings back a bad guy. It brings back a bad guy. It brings back, like, you know, a sort of antagonist or protagonist from the last one, Rogue Nation, which I actually quite... I mean, we on this show, we've spoken about Tom Cruise, and we've spoken about a sort of love-hate relationship with Tom Cruise, where you can see when he has too much control on a film and how we think that doesn't really work, and when he has a really good, strong director with him with a good script, he gives you gold. Yeah. And it's... So we spoke about the last Mission Impossible movie because I was getting a bit tired of the franchise. I quite liked Rogue Nation. And then this one is Fallout, and I think they had a lot of things that they had to try and top from Rogue Nation. You had Tom Cruise attached to the side of a plane in that one. You had... I think there's just bits... When you think about Mission Impossible movies, you think about certain moments. You don't... Like, if I asked anybody... Can you remember the storyline of the first Mission Impossible film?
No.
I do not.
I haven't seen it.
All I remember is Tom Cruise doing a stunt where he's hanging in a CIA room that's all white. And usually, Mission Impossible movies, you do not remember the plots. You remember the stunts. You remember the things they do. You remember Tom Cruise hanging on the outside of the Burj Khalifa in Dubai. You remember him attached to the side of a plane. Those are the sort of things you remember. You remember this one in Mission Impossible 3 where he's on a bridge and something blows up and he gets smacked into an SUV. And you remember the stunts. You don't remember the storyline. So the storyline of this film, what actually happens, nah, it doesn't really matter. All you know is that it has Tom Cruise, has Henry Cavill, it has Simon Pegg returning, has Ving Rhames returning, Rebecca Ferguson comes back, some people who showed up in a couple of films ago that you probably forgotten existed come back. And I think this is the first one where they try and do something. They try and do it a little bit like what they did with James Bond in Skyfall. They try and give some substance to the Ethan Hunt character, because usually it's just kind of like, Ethan Hunt, your mission, should you choose to accept it, go climb that building, go fly up that thing, go kill that goat, whatever. And this time they try and give you a little bit more of the Ethan Hunt character. With that being the pressy of the movie, over to Sean!
Okay, this movie, we spoke about Skyscraper and how nonsensical it was, but it was still good fun. Well, this film, for some reason, I saw it on the mainland, and it just made me really, really angry. I cannot explain why. The reviews for it have been great, but I just thought, I mean, there's bits in it with snipers that miss, and just, I mean, the end scene, people love it. I watched some reviews on this, and I read some reviews, and it's like got 97 rating on Rotten Tomatoes and all this, and I was like, I must be totally, totally strange, because this film just made me really, really angry, and quite frankly, I was not impressed by it. not impressed by it at all. I really did not enjoy it.
Sean, look, I know what you're usually like. I know how you get with all these things, and I know how you go, and I know the Tom Cruise theme might know have been working in the favor of this film, but I have to say I totally agree with you.
You do? Oh my God, do you know, totally. I'm so pleased, because I was expecting you to say, oh, this was great. So no. much action. It's just really, really, for me, I don't normally get angry in movies, but I was getting angry. I was thinking, no, I was almost squirming. The motorcycle chases, everything. I mean, it's all there, all the action, but it's just so, so ridiculous action. And it's supposed to be, this is, I guess, supposed to be, things are supposed to be serious in this, whereas in Skyscraper it wasn't.
It was I think...
Because the thing is, like, I was watching the film and I had the same thing. People had raved about this. I was seeing 5-star reviews and I was thinking, okay, cool. I quite like Rogue Nation. Let's see how they're going to top that, because Rogue Nation was a thrill ride. It was just like boom, boom, boom. You're like, oh,
really?
Yeah, we're just going from here, this place to this place and all that kind of stuff. And I don't even remember them trying to give anybody any backstory in there. They didn't do any of that. And I was like, yeah, I was with Rogue Nation. This film, I think, gets bogged down. It gets bogged down in trying to say, this is what Ethan Hunt is. This is why he saves the world. And I'm like, I don't really want to know that. And so I went in there thinking, okay, people are saying they're giving this thing 5-star reviews. And I watched it now. And throughout the film, I was going, really?
Really? Yeah.
And I think maybe I've been sitting around Sean too long. But there's a car chase in it. Well, there's a motorbike car chase through Paris that I just thought went on forever and didn't do anything. I was like, people were talking about, oh, the stunts, they've outdone themselves. This is the best thing. And I'm like, I am missing something here, because this motorbike chase is going on forever. Sean, if there's some impressive bits, usually when Tom Cruise crashes into stuff, because you know the way they film it, you know it's him on the bike. You know it's him doing all this stuff. So that's impressive. But it just doesn't really... And I feel like sometimes they, like, to bring the old guy, like the bad guy in this, it comes back from Rogue Nation. And I thought he was quite effective in Rogue Nation, because he was whispering and he was in the shadows and he had this whole like philosophy about him. But now they've turned him into this person who has this real sort of like Haiti man crush on Ethan Hunt and really wants to like, and everything he's doing is to destroy Ethan Hunt's life. And I'm like, that came out of nowhere.
And what's the actor's name?
Sean Harris.
I've seen the trailer. So for someone like me who hasn't seen any of the Mission Impossible films, is there anything about this film that you would say to the non-MI person? You get something out of it.
Well, I think this film, more than all the other ones, links back to previous films. So there's an actress called Michelle Monaghan, who, if you know the Mission Impossible movies, you know who she plays, and the fact that she's in this film tells you a little bit of what they're trying to do. And when she shows up, they do some exposition to explain who she is and why she's in the story and why she's supposed to be important. So they do a little bit of that. And that bit might confuse you if you haven't seen the other Mission Impossible movies. But I think you don't really need to watch any of the other ones. It's like a spy movie. I think this one is the closest to a Bond movie
I thought, is it like Bond, that it basically it has its own universe and then you just have to be aware of it without having to be familiar with all of it?
Yeah, it's the closest one to Bond, and I feel that they do a lot of box ticking. It's like, right, let's see, we have to go around the world, we have to go to some exotic location. Where are we going to? Paris. Okay, there's the Eiffel Tower, tick. Where are we going to next? We're going to London. Okay, cool. Oh yeah, well, there's the St. Paul's Cathedral, tick. And it just feels like there's bits where they're just doing that.
Yeah.
And it's there's some things that are a little bit, okay, and even though I might sound a little bit racist saying this, but trust me, I do not think all white people look the same. But Michelle Monaghan and Rebecca Ferguson do look alike. They bear a passing resemblance, so much so that my wife, who hasn't seen the other Mission Impossible movies, was getting confused in scenes going, which one is this? And I think they knew that, because there's one particular scene where they make a big point of knowing this is Tom Cruise. He is looking at this one, and that one is looking at Tom Cruise, because it can get really confusing. But it makes you just look at it and goes, I think Ethan Hunt might have a type.
Yeah, definitely. It was phenomenal how much they look like each other.
Yeah, did you think that as well?
Yeah, I did. I totally did think
cool.
that.
It's not just me being racist. So it's kind of like they look alike.
They look like twins.
They could play sisters, and I would totally buy it. So I just felt like there were bits of the film that just where I felt it was a bit stodgy. I felt it wasn't flowing. It wasn't crackling. People were making a big deal about essentially the chases. I didn't like the motorbike car chase. I thought it just went on forever, and it was very, very samey as far as I was concerned. I did not like, they have a helicopter chase.
Oh yeah,
I did not like that. And people, and they're raving about this helicopter chase, saying, "Oh, it's never been done in cinema before." I'm like, "There's a reason, probably, because a helicopter chasing a helicopter is not particularly fun." It's not particularly fun. I mean, the plan for how they're going to save the world doesn't make any sense. They essentially just luck out, quite frankly. So there's a lot of things in the film where I'm like, I don't feel like there's any stunt in this film that stands up with what you've seen in the other films. There's nothing like him climbing on the outside of the Burj Khalifa, nothing like him being attached to the side of a plane. There's something with a helicopter, but it's nowhere near as good. And it's, yeah, and then there's bits where you have exposition while they're defusing a nuclear bomb, where Vin Graham shows up, Michelle Monaghan shows up, and there Simon Pegg gets to do some action stuff, or he gets to get his butt totally kicked by Sean Harris. there are some fight scenes, and it's, but I am surprised at how much this film is being loved by everybody else, because I really don't think it's fun.
Okay.
I don't think it's as fun as Rogue Nation. If I had to tell you to go watch a Mission Impossible movie, I'll say watch Rogue Nation.
Yeah, okay. Rogue Nation was good, and was it Ghost Protocol?
Ghost Protocol was good too. There's nothing like them having a chase in a sandstorm. Like in Ghost Protocol, those are things that stick with you. I find it really hard to think of one image that sticks in my mind from the film. Everybody does well. I mean, people who they bring in, Vanessa Kirby, they do well. Angela Bassett, love her. Alec Baldwin, always good. Yeah, but I just feel like Henry Cavill's in him with his infamous mustache, with his infamous mustache, which he just couldn't shave for Justice League, and he had to have a real mustache for this film. To be honest with you, I don't know why on earth, but he does quite well. I think he's quite effective. Although the plot gets crazy, and who is he? What's he doing? Anyway, but I would give this a 3 out of 5. I've given it about 3 out of 5. I think it's stodgy.
I'll probably give it a 2 out of 5 for me. 2 out of 5 because I just got angry with it. I don't know why. I find myself sort of crossing my legs and twisting in my chair and thinking.
I can totally understand that because there are things to make you do that in this film.
Zeb, is this a film that you would catch? I mean, you're like me. You haven't seen this either. Is this one that you would be on your radar at all?
I mean, when it eventually sort of comes out and it's at a lower price, then I would consider going for it, but it's not something that particularly thrills me. I think it's quite sort of cliched at this point. And I mean, how many have there been in the franchise so far?
There's 6 of them.
So it's, you know, there's already enough content out there. And
I'll say this for them, they are trying very hard not to repeat themselves. I mean, there's I can't look at this film and say it's a repeat of the other films or it's a repeat of what they've done before. Nothing in this film is a repeat of what they've done before. I just feel like it's a bit stodgy, and the action didn't get. Oh, apart from the fight scene.
The fight scene in the bathroom. In the toilets, yeah.
That was a really good fight scene.
That was. Yeah, I agree on that. That was particularly good.
Yeah. All right, cool. So
3 for Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yes, 3 for Mission Impossible Fallout. Well, 2 from Sean, so we'll split the difference, 2.5.
Okay, and so moving on, we have got The Incredibles 2.
Yes!
I think, did all of us see that one?
I haven't seen it.
Sharon hasn't seen it because she has her animation aversion. We need to get you to therapy for that.
I know. I've tried. I do go to one animation a year. I do.
You've stretched it this. You've stretched it to 2 this year. So
no, I've only ever seen the one this year. Right. I've seen Sherlock Gnomes this year.
We're proud of that attempt.
Yeah, so I don't sort of shut the door and say I'm never opening that door again. It's a nightmare hides behind. I do say, I don't ever start off the year thinking I'm never ever ever going to watch animation ever again, but I just can't quite bring myself to go and watch them. So I did see Sherlock Gnomes, but Mission Impossible, The Incredibles 2, I've heard good things about.
It's awesome. All right, but don't take my word for it. Okay, we've heard a lot of everybody else, but we haven't heard much from Zeb. So Zeb, you've seen this film. What do you think of it?
Well, it's brilliant. It's incredible. I mean, we waited 14 years for this, and I don't think we were disappointed. I mean, I turned up at the cinema to see it on the first available time after school, and a few minutes later, pretty much our whole film studies class turned up to see it. So I think that says something in itself. I think it's obviously a very funny film, and it's very interesting, sort of showing that growing up and the family dynamic. But it was very clever with linking to today's sort of news and media profile, I think, especially sort of in a sense of learning that maybe not all the news we hear is true, and that it can get twisted, and famously by Trump, that all this fake news. And I feel like it was very cleverly incorporated into this. And then talking a lot sort of about minorities, there was a really beautiful quote in it that was, "You paid the price for a choice you never made." And I think that's very sort of...
Who says clever. That? Is that mum says this to the kids?
Yes, I know it's said to Violet. And I thought that was very clever and sort of taking that avenue down it. But then it took sort of a political and sort of feminist undertone, and mm-hmm. sort of the idea of Elastigirl being capable of doing lots of stuff on her own and being able to sort of kick butt with it. But then at the same time, Mr. Incredible sort of learning that his masculinity isn't all about proving himself to be better than everyone else or having to show his strength all on his own. And again, going back to that sort of first film of them being a family unit.
So I haven't actually seen the first film.
Do it.
What the?
I know.
So that's terrible.
I get the... what I do know about The Incredibles is, are they superheroes?
Yes.
And they each have their own power.
Yes.
And they're like... It was like a... superhero man, superhero woman marry and then they have superhero babies?
Yes, but okay. What I can never understand is how the sort of superpowers don't correlate. I would be quite interested.
No, I don't want to know.
Because
if it is in any mythology that you have, any superhero mythology, when they start explaining exactly how they have powers, that's when it goes to pot. Star Wars, when they brought midichlorians in, it messed the whole thing up. Heroes, when they started coming up with this whole gene that they said this is how everybody can get it, it messed the whole thing up. No, this is a world. Some people have superpowers. Deal with it. I don't want to know anything else. So, because in the first film, the whole idea is that this is a family of superheroes in a world where superheroes are illegal. So they.
Oh, okay.
So superheroes have been made illegal because essentially they're too much of an insurance risk. Because each time they show up, they destroy the whole town, and that's the whole. So that's the thing with the Incredibles that it sort of puts in there. Now, and in the second one, it's kind of like in the aftermath of the first one when they've shown okay that there's this maybe the ideas are turning and people are beginning to think superheroes are okay again, and then something happens right at the beginning of this one, which picks up right at the end of the first film. It's like there's no time has passed whatsoever. Incredibles world. It was right at the end of the first film, and then people start thinking, oh my god, maybe we shouldn't make these guys legal, maybe they should remain illegal because they're too much of a risk. And what you said, I love the feminism thing. I mean, you didn't expect all that deep stuff from an animated movie, did you?
Well, I know that they have hidden depths.
Yeah,
because
it's Pixar.
Most animation, I think, even though I struggle to you know embrace the genre, I do appreciate that it can be. Finding Dory, I thought, was my animation film last year. Amazing film. I thought
it
was one of my best films of the year. Because it wasn't just about, you know, fish swimming in the sea. It had depth.
Yeah.
Mm. It had heart.
Yeah, and I actually quite love what you're saying about the feminism thing. Because the whole idea in the first one was that Mr. Incredible goes and works. And he works in a job that he hates. So that, to provide for the family. While Elastigirl stays home and looks after the kids. And in this film, they switch it around so that she has to go and work and he has to stay home and look after the kids. But the reason they do it, I think it's quite clever because their powers are such that Mr. Incredible is big and strong and he causes most of the destruction. Elastigirl is more flexible and, quite frankly, cleverer and comes up with ways of sorting out the problem that doesn't involve punching people in the face. And so it's kind of, and I think it's almost kind of like reflecting the sort of typical male way of doing things, hit it with a hammer, but showing that there's power and there's value in this, because the people who are trying to bring the superheroes back say, we don't need Mr. Incredible, you need to stay at home, we need Elastigirl because you are less destructive. They actually say that, and I thought that was genius. And also, because I know we're running out of time, but I just have to say, what has chopped into one of my top fives of car chases. I'm Mission Impossible, need to watch this film and figure out how to do a car chase, because there's a car chase or there's a bike versus train chase in this film that is amazing.
Yes.
amazing. And also Jack versus Raccoon, awesome.
Yeah, there's some brilliant comedy moments while sort of keeping it all there, and sort of that whole idea of sort of, are you a good guy if your existence is illegal, and sort of really playing on that, which again goes back to Trump sort of with sort of the immigration problems at the minute. It's just so clever, and the balance in acceptance and appreciation between the couple, and sort of when they swap the roles and sort of seeing how
Jack,
the other coach.
We've got to mention Jack.
Oh, Jack
is awesome. Jack is like this film's Steve Webber.
He's the best package.
Who's he?
Okay, so they have three kids. They have Violet, who's their girl, who's the eldest child. They have Dash, who is the first son, but the second kid. He's really quick, as his name says. And they have Jack, who's a baby. And throughout the first film, the whole thing is that, oh, we have one kid who doesn't have any superpowers. But Jack, it's not even a spoiler to say that, but Jack shows at the end of the first film that he does, but just nobody knows about it. And the family still don't know about it, because when he showed, they were not around. And there's a short called Jack Attack, which is genius.
Yeah,
you need to see that. Oh, we really need to move on. We need to get to the next ad break. But so Jack is the baby, and in this film, he comes to the fore, and is about the way the family finds out that he has powers, and the way they deal with that is hilarious. All right, cool. I think we're gonna have to go to the next ad break.
But what do you score it?
Easy 4 out of 5.
Yeah, easy 4.
Four and a half, easily.
Easily like a high 4. High 4. All right, cool. All right, we'll be back after these messages.
Vectis Radio. 104.6. The heart of the island's community.
Did you have a good day, Big Grandpa, yesterday?
Yeah, we went to the Shipwreck Centre, a maritime museum with Tarleton Barnes. It was amazing. They had loads of things found deep under the sea.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like gold and silver coins, old diving suits, and a real mermaid. I even did a treasure hunt and got a prize.
That sounds great. Did Grandpa have fun?
He loved it, and he loved the free parking.
That sounds like Grandpa.
The Shipwreck Centre and Maritime Museum, a real flavour of the maritime world. For more, go to shipwreckcentre.com.
Hey guys, it's Lucas, male solo artist on the Isle of Wight. Looking for 80s and 90s entertainment? Look no further. Lucas is an up-and-coming solo artist on the island and will surely make those occasions a little bit special. Pubs, bars, hotels, weddings, and much more. If you want to book me, contact me on Facebook on my page, Lucas Male Solo Artist.
Or telephone 07599 175891.
Thank you.
Have you ever experienced a light lunch or just a snack on a double-decker bus? Well, now you can at the Bus Stop Cafe, situated in Hollyhurst Park, Branstow, Sandown. We open 7 days a week, where you can sit back and enjoy tea, coffee, a cold drink, sandwiches, light lunches, smoothies and shakes, and yummy, yummy cakes in this diverse setting. And there's free on-site parking. We cater for all occasions, birthdays, clubs, parties. Check out our feedback and customer reviews on Facebook. The Bus Stop Cafe, Hollyhurst Park, Branstow, Sandown.
Red Squirrel Property Shop are an independent, family-run local business that's honest, trustworthy and reliable. Isn't that exactly what you need when renting out your home? Honesty. At Red Squirrel Property Shop, we help rent out and manage properties all over the island. We can offer you various services from guaranteed rent on time, fully managed and tenant introduction. We are there to help take away the stress from renting out your home. Call us today to have the life of a stress-free landlord on 01983 521-212.
We all know the problem. You want to listen to your favourite Vectis show, but your blimmin' life is getting in the way. What with work and the obligation of having to care for your kids. Well, don't worry, we've got a cunning plan. Quit work and have the kids adopted. Failing that, you can always catch up with your favourite shows through Vectis Radio on Mixcloud, whether it's the Rock Monster show, the Retro show, or something entirely different. There's enough to satisfy all your listening needs, unless you like jazz or classical. Click on the link on the Vectis Radio homepage or go to mixcloud.com/Vectis Radio iPlayer.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, has a limited number of advertising spots available. Give your business the boost it needs and reach across the island. Email our team today, marketing@vectisradio.fm.
Welcome back to the Movie Review Show at Vectis Radio. So we're now going to discuss Hotel Artemis.
Hotel Artemis.
Okay, cool. We got to crack on because we have like no time. So Hotel Artemis is a film written by a guy called Drew Pearce, who also wrote Iron Man 3. He's an English guy. He's been working in Hollywood a while. And this film is essentially, if you've seen John Wick and you've seen the Continental Hotel in John Wick, it's kind of like, imagine a film set within the Continental Hotel. So it's all about I think he originally said that his original pitch for this film was Bad Guy Hospital. So it's essentially a hospital. It's 10 years in the future, so it's set in 2028. Yep. And the whole idea is that it's this old hotel. The top floor penthouse has been turned into a members' hospital. So any bad guys, if they've gone out, they've done stuff and like they've gotten shot or they've gotten stabbed, they can just go there. They can scan their membership chip and they come in, they get fixed, they get patched up, no questions asked. And this is all about one night in which there's a riot going around outside in LA. So the streets aren't safe. Things are happening. And for one reason or another, all these guys, like an arms dealer shows up, an assassin shows up, two bank robbing brothers show up in the Artemis because, well, one reason, something or other has gone wrong. Some of them just trying to find a place to hide out and wait for the riots to go pass over, all that kind of stuff. But you have the nurse, and nobody has names. So everybody's given the names of the suite in which they stay. So you have Acapulco, because that's the name of his suite. You have Nice. You have Waikiki at Honolulu. You have Niagara. And they have the nurse, who's played by Jodie Foster, who runs the place and keeps it going. And you have Everest, played by Dave Bautista, who is essentially her assistant / bodyguard. So he's actually a nurse, but he's there. So if anybody kicks in, he can take care of the bad guys and he can kick them out.
He's a healthcare professional.
He's a healthcare professional, don't you know? You know what that means? That means it goes both ways. But so this film, it's like a genre kind of dyed in the wool thing. And watching this, knowing Sean's likes, it made me think, I'm not saying this to the level of this, but it made me think of like an Assault on Precinct 13 or one of those 80s, lean, we don't have much money, so we're just going to focus on mood and we're going to focus on location and we're going to use one location to the best of our ability and just put interesting characters in there and see how they bounce off each other. So that's a prezi. I quite liked it. Sean?
Yeah. I have to agree with that. I really enjoyed this movie. When the trailer came out, I thought it was going to go one way, and what I really enjoyed about this film, because certain character, and it sort of wasn't what I expected. The film was different to what I expected from what I got from the trailer. And yeah, I did enjoy this movie. You nailed it, really. I like these small enclosed places where you know lots of stuff's happening and
yeah,
there's plenty of action. And like you said, you got Jodie Foster, Dave Bautista, Jeff Goldblum.
Yep.
And I forget Charlie Day,
Sophia Boutella, Sterling K. Brown, Brian Tyree Henry. Great cast.
Really good cast. And really, really enjoyed it. Yeah, this hospital is all set up to, like you say, cater for bad guys. And there's some pretty nasty characters, really, that go there. But there's rules. They must have rules. So, you know.
Like the Continental.
Exactly, the Continental.
When I saw this original, I thought John Wick. This is essentially a film set in the Continental.
Yeah.
It's less glitzy. It's a lot more seedy and dirty. And like, so this is a future that has been lived in. This is a future in which, like, you know, it's kind of thing where you have blood on an iPhone or you have any phone you see in the film. It's not shiny and ooh, look how it's an iPhone, but it has dirt and grime and a cracked screen.
It's been around a while.
And that's the thing with the film. And I really, really enjoyed it.
It was a good film. A couple of times, did you think Jodie mumbled a little bit some of the time? And
I think it's a very mannered performance, in that she's given, even the way she walks, the way she walks and everything like that, it's like the nurse is a very particular character. So I think even the way she was, she kind of and I read an interview with her that said she was doing the thing where she kind of does, like, you know, Dustin Hoffman, when you see Dustin Hoffman movies, he does this thing where he's kind of like almost, he's speaking to people, but it's like he's talking to himself. And so she said that she was doing that for the nurse because the nurse is a bit of a, she's agoraphobic. She hasn't left the hotel for 3 years. All that, and so you have this idea that all these characters show up at this point, but they all have this life behind them. And they have all this thing that exists out. They have a life that exists outside of this film. and you're just meeting them at this point where they're all in the same place for whatever reason it is. And there's some interesting ideas. There's some bits of it that go a bit Black Mirror, like when you talk about what happens with the eyes and how, and there's an assassin, but she has like these contact lenses that transmit. So if someone pays her to kill somebody, she can transmit the killing to the other person because the other person wants to see the enemy die. And it's so I think it's a I enjoyed this film a lot. I thought it was really, really well written. I thought it was well put together. I feel like there's one character that just did not need to be there. This girl in an alley.
Yeah, I know this character. Yeah. I mean, there wasn't a lot of point to that.
There was no point to that character. I feel like there was more they wanted to do with that, but maybe they ran out of money and they just figured out a way of like, oh, give us something. But I really like this film. And it's a world that you look at and you think, I would like to see a little bit more of that world.
And I mean, there was a reference in the film, wasn't there, of maybe there's some more of these
yes, these places there's some more of these. I think essentially it's kind of like, I feel a little bit like this film's thunder might have been stolen a bit by John Wick, because the same way John Wick goes, we have a Continental in Rome. We have a Continental. So you have the hint that there's other places like this around, that this is not just
around
the only world.
Yeah,
around the world, around the US, you have the others, but it builds a very intriguing world. It keeps its atmosphere all the way through, and I think the characters do show up, and you immediately get, oh my god, that's a douchebag, I do not want to hang around that guy, that's a loyal guy, that's somebody, oh, there's something that maybe is going on there. And even Jeff Goldblum, he shows up as pretty much the mafia kingpin of LA, but he shows up in, like, you know, in slippers and a suit, and I would recommend. I think it's out of cinemas now already, but I think when it comes on anything, TV or anything like that,
it won't be long before it appears on a platform.
I hope not, and I would say catch it because it's a very good film.
Yeah.
Okay, how many stars would you give it?
Four. Definite four.
Four. Wow. Yeah. Big
okay,
four.
And we'll move on to the last film of the day, which is Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Hot off the press.
Hot off the press. Okay, I pretty much ran straight out of the cinema right into Vectis Radio after watching this film, and I am buzzing. I am buzzing. So this is the latest. This is the 20th Marvel movie in the last 10 years that they've made. And so this is Ant-Man starring Paul Rudd, Scott Lang. If you saw the first one, it was more of a lighter film in the whole Marvel thing. It was a heist movie. It was funny. You had all these supporting characters, quick talking, all that good. And it just really, really, like, essentially, Ant-Man had characters that you just fell in love with almost immediately. And in this one, the storyline is that, because Ant-Man shows up in Captain America Civil War, and after the effects of Captain America Civil War, or the events in that, he is now locked up. He's been under house arrest for 2 years. So he's been under house arrest, he's there. They told him that you can't leave the house, you can't see anybody, you can't associate with these people, because if you associate with any of these people, we're going to throw you in prison for 20 years. The FBI have an ankle tracker on him and all that. And Sean, I think you're going to love you're going to love bits of this film, because Ant-Man has always been a father-daughter story. Even the first movie was very much the story about a father and fathers trying to be what their daughters hope they would be, or be good fathers to their daughters, or trying to figure out in their own way what their daughter wants. And the first scene where you see Scott Lang in this film, where you see Scott Lang, there's this whole absolutely cute thing that is like straight out of E.T. or a John Hughes movie in the 80s between Scott Lang and his daughter.
Oh, wow.
It's the kind of thing that if you don't have a daughter, makes you go, I want one. it's just so well done, and I think the humor works really well. But I just love the fact that Marvel, because people talk about, oh, if you just go see all these superhero movies, why do you want to go see them? But they keep making everything different, because the last thing we had was Infinity War, which was this big universe spanning big apocalyptic thing, and then they come back to Ant-Man, which they've chunked it right down. This thing doesn't leave San Francisco. I think it makes brilliant use of the geography of San Francisco, of what it's like driving around San Francisco. And talking about car chases, this has got, I mean, it's a good month for car chases, and also a bad month because of Mission Impossible. But this has got a car chase. It has quite a few of them, but they have jumped right up in my estimation, like, if I want to say top five car chases I've ever seen in cinema, this one has got, it's got one of them. Incredibles 2 has got the other one. Because the car chase in this, once you've accepted that they have this technology that can shrink people down and everything like that, they use it in such inventive ways in the film. Like, they use it in such ways, and the way, because at the beginning of the film, Michael Douglas as Hank Pym and Evangeline Lilly, Hope Van Dyne, they're on the run. And the way that you can see, the way they show them on the run, you can understand, okay, that's why they haven't caught them. That's why they haven't been able to track them down. Because the way they once they've established this is the technology that we have in this world, these are the rules of the technology that they've established over three films now, they stick to those rules and they use them in inventive ways between everything. And I just love that. There's not even enough time to talk about Michelle Pfeiffer, because they do the whole, you know how they do the de-aging thing on Michael Douglas for at the beginning of the first Ant-Man? They do that with Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer. And their technology has gotten mind-blowing.
Wow.
It looks like Michelle Pfeiffer, like, you know,
Catwoman days.
No, pre-Catwoman days.
Wow. It looks like Lady Hawk days.
It looks like 80s Michelle Pfeiffer. And you're looking at it going, and I think there's one or two moments where you think, I think I got it. But no, it's back.
Well, we've still got time to just ask one question.
Yes.
Does it set in the MCU timeline? Is it after Infinity War? And does it ever reference Infinity War?
It does reference Infinity War. I won't tell you how.
Okay. Oh, right.
And just really quickly, does the film feature the Wasp enough for her to be in the title?
This film is actually pretty much, to be honest with you, the title could be more Wasp and the Ant-Man. Yeah, the title could be more Wasp and the Ant-Man, because I think it's a lot more about her than it is about him.
Okay, so how many stars before we have to go?
4.
Okay, that's all we've got time for. Okay, so goodbye from us.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.